Going on stage as a comedian, I know you were a singer originally, so you'll know about, way before backing tracks, you'd have had a live pianist or an orchestra. To go out there as a comedian, you've got no backup.
Lonely.
So what makes you? Do you still get adrenaline now before you go on stage?
Or? I'll tell you now, the dressing room's cleared 5 minutes before I come in, and I have a terrible habit, I kick the wall. it's just something I've done for years and years, and I just kick the wall. Mm. Even here, at this leisure centre here, when I've worked this place, I'm kicking the wall, and I think the last time I was here, I did it with Jim Davison. Mm. And they clear the room for me for about 5 minutes before, and then I stand there, and it's going through my mind what I've got to do, what I haven't got to do. I normally have the same start, but I haven't got anything planned as far as the show is concerned. It's as it comes in, I talk to the audience, they give me points of view, and I fire off of them, and it's just kept me alive.
I find it incredible because I know what it's like when you learn song lyrics, you've got them in your head.
Yep.
Do you ever have an off night, or is it just sometimes you just go, oh, I'm not too sure where I'm going to go?
Well, if the off nights are when you've been on stage and you feel as though you've been there for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And you haven't. You think, oh, this is dragging its bum here. Mm. You know, where a good night, you're on stage and next time you look down at your watch, you find out you've been there an hour.
Yeah.
And you think, Christ, I've been here an hour. But the gags have flown, and you try and at one time when I first started, I used to try different avenues of gags, and people don't believe it, but I could tell a gag, and I used to tell a gag, and it would die. And I thought, that's a good gag. Why is that dying? Mm. And so I'd think about it out of the blue. I would move it from where I had it in the show and put it either forward or right at the end of the act, and it'd go woof.
Yeah.
And you can only learn that. And I was very, very lucky because not so much now, but in the days when there was theatres around and the Circus Tavern and Bailey's at Watford and everything else like that, I was working 7 nights a week. And Sunday lunchtimes, doing Sunday lunchtimes at Basildon, a place called Sweeney's. And, of course, all the blokes would come down there to see what gags I was going to come out with and everything else like that. And of course, all the time, I was a singer-comedian. Mm. And then Johnny Hemp came along and put me on the comedians.
Yep.
And once he put me on the comedians, I became a comedian singer.
Yep.
And now my songs are what we call wee-wee songs. Because as soon as I start to sing, they all go for a wee-wee. Because they know I can't get them. Because I'm singing a song.
Yeah.
And I've cleaned that up.
Yeah, I thought you might have done. I said to you before you came on air, I remember going to see you. You were the first comedian I ever saw, and it was in Islington. And we were talking about the pub on the corner. And I think I might have arrived in a little bit late. And I can remember being petrified because somebody said, you mustn't arrive late to any when comedians on, because I'd never seen anyone before. Yeah. But it was absolutely rampacked, and I stood as far away from the stage as I possibly could. And that was it. I thought, don't go to the loo, just stand at the back.
Because I sell from the back to the front.
Who would you say in today's comedy? Because obviously comedy changes with, I think it's gone full circle, because you had a lot of the alternative comedians in the 80s, and it's gone back to sort of like the comedy before, in a way. So who would you say in today's comedy world?
Mickey Flanagan.
Like? Yeah.
Comes straight to my mind.
Yeah.
Mickey's a very talented, talented guy. Mm. I've got to be honest with you, I sit and watch all of them. Mm. I watch Michael McIntyre. What drives me mad with Michael McIntyre, he doesn't stand still. He's up and down the stage, and that's got to be nerves. Mm. But the stuff that he's got written for him is mustard.
Yeah.
Do you know what? There was a comedian with us on The Comedians, and I saw him a few months ago, and I said to him, you've stopped doing comedy. He said, no, I'm an actor now. And do you know what? He was such a brilliant comedian. That was Russ Abbott. Russ Abbott as a comedian, he used to be in a group called The Abbots, and he played the drums, and he was the clown.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, I worked with Russ on The Comedians, and he was a brilliant comedian. And now he's an actor. Yeah. Doesn't want to do comedy at all.
It must. I suppose if you don't go out and you do it on a regular basis, you can get something gets further away from you.
Yes, it does. Yeah, you know. I mean, I'm very, very lucky in as much that my wife likes to listen to me going different gigs, and I'm turning like this. The hospice. I've been away on a fortnight's holiday in Menorca. I've got material now that I haven't done for 30 years.
Yeah,
and I have brought it up today.
Yeah.
And I've people think I'm mad. I might be doing a bit of painting around my villa, and I'm telling myself a gag. And my missus will walk by. She said, "What did you say?" I said, "No, that's what."
It's not where you've kicked the wall. Take a bit of painting.
No, that only happens in his restaurants.
What's the best heckle that you've ever had? Because do you think people are heckling more now?
No, in the old days, I suppose one of the worst heckles I ever had, I was working at Butlin's in Pathelli, and I went into an Indian restaurant. I was doing a gag about an Indian restaurant. I said, Indian restaurant, the size of the crisps, you know, and everything like that. And this bloke stood up and he said, "You're a racialist," in front of, there had to be 2,000 people there. I said, "You think you are a racialist talking like that?" So I said, "I'm doing an impression." I said, "And if I am a racialist, I'm a rich one." Not only am I a rich one, I don't have to come to Butlins for my holiday. Good night.
Do people like that?
The place went woof. Went woof. It was renowned for killing comedians. Mm. I had a worse night the night before, and with a young lady, rather large. And when I say rather large, she had to be 20 stone, and she's effing and blinding. You should have heard her. And the following morning, I was doing the Sunday. I did the Saturday night and the Sunday night. So I said to her, "Listen, I said I've got a message for you." I said, "Bernard Manning's here tomorrow lunchtime, and he's got a message. He wants to see you. So pop in here tomorrow at 12:30. Bernard wants to have a chat to you." And I got rid of her like that. Mm. And the audience went, "Ooh." Well, Bernard slaughtered her the following morning. And when I say slaughtered, Bernard was a very good ab libber.
Yeah.
Very good. You know, people moaned about Bernard. He wasn't racist. He was a very, very generous man, Bernard. Bernard was a nice guy.
Yeah.
You know, there's most of us in the business try, but comedy wise, you can't. When I get so annoyed when they turn and say to me, "You're a racialist," I say, "Do you think so?" I said, "Now, I call a racialist somebody that would punch or beat up a black man or a coloured person of any kind." I said, "That's the last thing from my mind." Mm. The fact that I developed an accent, which Jim Dawson nicked off of me for a long while. But nowadays, we're frightened to do it. We're frightened to go that way, because immediately you get all this and that. And I've got to tell you, I toured. I toured with the Four Tops. I toured with the Drifters. And a very dear friend of mine is Frank Bruno. Frank lives here quite locally.
Yeah.
And Frank and myself raised a great, great deal of money for, at that time, it was Rush Green Hospital. Frank and myself used to spend a great deal of time doing charity work. A lovely, lovely guy. Mm. And when I go on holiday, I go to Barbados and I stay with a fella by the name of Eddie Grant.
Mm.
Now, last time I saw Eddie, he was definitely black. I said, when I get out there and I say to him, "I'm still a racialist, you know," he says, "Yeah, I know you are, James." You know, it really does annoy me. I've never been a racialist and never would be. I do an Irish gag, Irish fellow driving down a motorway. He's riding there, and the M25 in a Ford Focus. And there's a lorry in front, and he's beep, 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 flashing his light for 9 miles. The lorry driver finally pulled over, and the driver, he said, "You got a problem?" "Oh, sir," he said, "I've been trying to stop you for the past 9 miles. Now I've slipped into a half Irish accent." I'm not having a go at the Irish.
Yeah.
I turned to the Irish friend and said, "You're losing your load." And the lorry driver said, "I'm gritting." Nobody objects to that.
They were saying that again on the radio, saying with people who used to do quite a lot of Irish gags.
Yeah,
but comedy does it. I mean, it does change. But you've got some comedians that, you know, talk about going close to the wire. They go way over.
Oh,
Of, I can't remember the Scottish guy's name. He's got the glasses. I have seen him live. And it was kind of, it's that comedy where you go, I shouldn't be laughing and I don't know what to do. Hide. Normally it's hide. St. Francis Hospice. We obviously have St. Francis Hospice in to Phoenix loads of times. I've got personal experience of St. Francis Hospice, which I mentioned to you off air. They are a fantastic organisation.
Fabulous.
Looking after people with life-limiting illnesses. Now, you are doing this gig on 14th of October at the Premier Cinema in Romford, along with Mickey as well. Before we just talk about the gig and what people can expect, tell us about how you got involved with St. Francis.
St. Francis, I first got involved. My eldest sister, Jean, had cancer, and they took her in for a respite. And I went over. My sister, Jean, she was my eldest sister, and she was a lovely lady, and I tried to help her like wildfire, because her husband died, and I helped her out, which I was entitled to. I'm her brother. And she was taken into the hospital. And when I first got there, it was nowhere near like it is today. And I walked around it, and they did so much for that sister. And then sometime later, my brother had to go in for a respite, and they looked after Pat. And then Margaret she needed help at home, and because she wouldn't go into the hospice, but the hospice sent people to her and equipment, which helped her with. And they did exactly the same thing with my sister Mary. But my brother Michael, who passed away just over a year ago now, he had Parkinson's. Parkinson's plus or one thing like that. And the things they found, Michael used to go over twice a week to the day centre. And if I tell you, they came and fitted up things for him in his house so that he didn't trip over stuff. And he could get the wheelchair over. And they even found out that my brother Michael was a West Ham supporter.
Yeah.
And somebody in that hospice went out of their way to talk to somebody at West Ham. And Julian Dix came over and spent an hour or two at the hospice. My brother was made up for that. You know, and I can assure you, my brother Michael has done something that I've never done. My brother Michael has met the Queen. I've met everybody in the royal family but the Queen. Yeah. But my brother Michael was a telephone engineer for the Royal Courts of Justice, and he actually met the Queen. There's lovely pictures of him, and the Queen met him and was very interested in what he did. Yeah. The hospice there, and just recently they asked me would I do a day visit, and I said certainly, by all means. And I went over and I walked in, and this gentleman went, Jimmy Jones. And I said, and we sat talking, and he went back to, and he reminded me of days when I started as a full-time professional. I went to the Royal Standard at Walthamstow with the Don Harvey Trio. And I knew the Wheatleys very well indeed, because I'd won their talent competition on several occasions when they used to have the Rising Sun in Bethnal Green. Lil Wheatley and Harry were a lovely couple, and I always got knocked out of the final of the talent competition by a fellow by the name of Matt Monroe. Matt always used to win, and I hated the Lil, but we were very, very good. He was a bus driver in those days, and he was a good friend, a very, very good. We used to laugh, and Jay said, you know, I'm going to win tonight, Joe. Yeah, and I know he had a sweet voice.
Yeah.
He really did have a sweet voice. Anyway, while I was there, this guy went back, and he talked about names that, like Dennis Diehl from the Honeycombs, he was there. And he named, and I went to him, crying out loud, and I sat talking to him for 40 minutes at the hospice. And I said to him, and what are you here for? Thinking he was going to say cancer. And he said, no, I've got Alzheimer's. And I said to him, but you've just been talking to me about 56 years ago. He said, that's the trouble. Yeah. I can remember all those days, but I don't know where I live and things like that. And it's a disease. But they spend time over that hospice. And I've got to tell you, from the time you walk in that front door, you do not see a sad face anywhere.
No.
And to me, quite personally, if they could make that double the size to help double the amount of people, it would, and all the people from the hospice, and I know there's a great deal of volunteers that do it as well.
Yeah.
I think it's just a magical place.
And it costs millions and millions of pounds.
Yes.
Most of the money comes from, people that raise funds for the hospice. Mm. So every jumble sale, every cake afternoon, yep, or whether you're doing a theatre tour, whatever, that makes a huge amount of difference because it's obviously offering up beds. When people are in hospital, they can also go out into people's homes as well. That, yep, they send out nurses or people from the hospice. So you don't have to go into the hospice, but they work in the whole area. So they do so,
yes,
much
do
stuff. And as you said, when you walk in there, if you've never been to a hospice in your life, it's not what you think it's going to be.
Go over and pay a visit, mm, and just ask, can you have a look around? They're very, very, very nice people there.
Yeah.
And you will come out of there, the charisma in there is absolutely magic.
Yeah.
Absolutely magic. It really improved the charisma in there. And sorry about that. That was my phone
ringing.
That's
a bit of a rock and roll phone. Mine just beeps a couple of times. bit of a tune. So thanks very much for coming in today, Jimmy.
The pleasure's mine. It really and truly is. We hope there's not many tickets left, and we hope we've got a nice full house.
Lovely. Brilliant. Thanks very much to Jimmy Jones. And Mickey out there, we'll just give him a wave, which will do no good because we're on radio.
Okay.
All right. Thanks so much. 11:29. You're listening to Michelle Ward on Phoenix 98 FM.